I'm Hannah.
I'm Sheena.
And I'm Lori. And you're listening to Cemetery Row.
And I think I made Lori laugh right before
you did. We started. You did. Poor Derek. He's going to be like, what is this noise?
What's that noise?
It's okay.
Yeah.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
How's it going?
How be it? We're all very tired.
It's going.
It's daylight saving, and we're exhausted.
I hate this, man.
I like this one. I don't like the one in the fall because I don't like it being darker.
I love that. I'm like,
my sad can't handle it.
Well, and Chicago is on the furthest east of the central time zone. So we start at like 4 o'clock.
Mm-mm.
And I'm like, bedtime, bitches.
No, that makes me suicidal. Literally.
I like that it's daylight longer. I don't like that I lose an hour and it fucks me up for like days.
Yeah.
And then children.
In the summer, it's like twilighty at like 9 o'clock. And I'm like, I want to go to bed.
Ain't nothing stopping you from going to bed, boo.
It's light out.
Blackout curtains, boo.
Do you know, I have not hung a single curtain in this house. I need to do that before mom comes to visit because she will roast me for not having curtains.
I can send my landlord over to you and they can yell at you.
They are more than
daring
welcome
to open your blinds.
Chicago has a whole tenants' rights department. I will call them the fuck up.
I live in Mississippi. I'm suffering. Speaking of suffering, I'm getting over the flu, so that's why I sound bad. If I sound bad, I don't know if I do. I can't tell.
I know
thank you, Luhu. Everyone is probably, Nelson from Simpsons at me because last episode I made fun of Spencer because he did not get the flu shot and he got the flu. Well, I did get the flu shot and I got the flu. So yes, I know. I have called Spitzer. He has laughed at me. It's okay. But I would still have rather gotten the flu shot.
We can blame Spencer for this, though.
No, I have not seen him in weeks.
Oh.
So I do not know where I
was going to go with it. You could have lied.
No. I told him he had the flu days before he went to the doctor and found out he had the flu. I was like, sir, as sick as you are and as much pain as you're in, that sounds like the flu because the flu hurts. Right. And so
it does. It really
that's
does.
Why I'm like, I would still rather have gotten the shot and gotten sick than to not have had the shot because it's so bad. And
yeah, because when I had strep, I thought I was dying.
I almost went to the ER with this, and that's saying a lot for me. Like, I think I have a decent pain tolerance level, and I was calling Uncle. I was like, please, for the love of God, just kill me or get it over with something. Yes, Spencer, no. The only thing I think is maybe I went to a Battle of the Bands a few weeks ago. Maybe I got it there. I really don't know.
It's hard because
it
I don't
at a gas station.
Anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what my doctor said. She was like, you literally, because they asked her, like, have you been around anyone sick? And I said, I do know people who have the
they
flu.
They asked me the
them.
Same thing. And I was
and
like,
they said,
I
then
drove,
it could be anywhere.
Right. I drove from Mississippi to Chicago and back. Like
anywhere in between.
I could have gotten it anywhere.
So I don't sound great. But if you want to come hang out with me when I'm not sick,
I segue.
Yeah, I have lots of tours coming up. Of course, my tours at Elmwood Cemetery. I have True Crime tours coming up in April and in May. And then I have my writer's tour, The Plot Thickens, in June. And then on top of that, I'm typically your Monday night ghost guide for Backbeat tours in downtown Memphis. And I do some weekend tours, but I'm mostly always for sure Monday night. But the big thing I've been working on for months now and has now had its grand debut, I wrote a tour for Backbeat Tours. And I think they're just calling it the Memphis True Crime Tour. We've played around with a couple of cute names, but I think it's just the Memphis True Crime Tour. But it's a true crime tour of downtown Memphis. It's all on a bus. So no 2-hour, 2-mile walking like you do on the ghost tour. This is all on a bus. We do get off at a couple of stops because there are a few very interesting places where the crime happened right here, or something attached to the crime happened in the area or something, so we can get off and show you, like, this is where this happened. And the thing I like about it is it's very much a historical true crime tour in that we talk about how these crimes affected Memphis history and how they affect life today in some cases. And we cover everything. It's not so terrifyingly murder, murder, murder. There's a lot of that. We talk about George Howard Putt, who was like this spree slash serial killer that Memphis had in the 60s. We talk about Georgia Tan, who kidnapped over 5,000 babies
Including
for her
Ric
black
Flair.
market, including Ric Flair, and all this kind of stuff. But then we also talk about the death of a car, which is the most wonderful story. My boss, Bill, came, that was one of his stories he wanted on the tour. And it's so entertaining. Someone does die in that story, but we're not as worried about him as we are about the car. Funnily enough, we
Fair.
talk about the death of the Shelby County Jail, which was supposedly escape proof, and we meet a guy who made sure it was not.
Love
So
it.
it's a lot of fun. I went on the debut outing the other day. My friend Shannon, who is one of our tour guides at Backbeat, who is, I think, one of the most talented tour guides I've ever been out with on any kind of tour. She gave the debut tour, which was perfect. She did a wonderful job, of course she did. She's also I think an assistant or some kind of she works for us mostly, but she does sometimes she's a duck master at the Peabody, which I love.
I follow one of the duck masters on TikTok, and he is my favorite human on the
He is.
planet.
He's adorable. Yes, I love him. But yeah, she does that sometimes too, which I'm like, yes, a lady getting in there being a duck master. It was a great tour, and I was really pleased with how it came out. I mean, we had done a run through with me, and I think Shannon had did a run through, and then we took an initial group out the other day. But anyway, if you want to take that tour, sign up for that. I think I'm going to mostly be on weekends on that one, because it's like 4:30 in the afternoon. It's perfect to go on before you go and enjoy some Memphis barbecue for supper. Anyway,
Absolutely.
just pimping all my tours out. If you want to go to something at Elmwood, it's elmwoodcemetery.org. If you want to take a Backbeat tour, go to backbeattours.com, I think is the website. Anyway, oh, and I wanted to mention, right before I got deathly ill, I probably got my disease from this. I've joked that I got my disease from this trip, but I know it wasn't. Last weekend, I went to Clarksdale, Mississippi, down in the Delta. Our friend Stacy, who makes the Oracle cards and the tarot cards, she's got the Rhythm and Soul Tarot deck right now up on Kickstarter. She invited me and our friend Edna down to Clarksdale to hang out at the Governor's Mansion. And when I say Governor's Mansion, that's how they spell it. They spell it like governor, because it
Love
was
it.
the governor from like 1912 of Mississippi. And he lived in Clarksdale for a little while. Anyway, he has this amazing mansion in Clarksdale, and she is friends with the owners, and so we got to stay there. And it was wonderful. We did some ghost hunting and just hanging out and drinking and eating, and it was great.
Absolutely.
But one of my favorite moments, Edna was on her way down, so it was just me and Stacy, and she drives me out to the middle of nowhere. And the whole time I'm like, Stacy, look, if you just want to kill me, just we're in the Delta. There is a swamp over there. Just roll me over. My body will be eaten in a matter of minutes, I can guarantee you. And she's like, no, I have something cool to show you. We got in the middle of nowhere. There's this Stovall Farms that has been a plantation since plantation days, owned by the same family since plantation days. Apparently, Muddy Waters was born and raised out there. And
Cool.
so it's been a working farm since for 170 years or whatever. But in the middle of one of their fields, it's just a plain open field with, I'm sure they will grow, I don't know, looks like there were corn cob husks out there when I was walking through the other day. There's this huge group of trees in the middle of the field, a good ways back from the road. And she's like, we're going to go in those trees. And I'm like, why? Like, why are we about to get out in the cold weather and traipse through this field to get to a group of trees? And she's like, there's a cemetery there. And I'm like, what?
Love
So I assumed it would be the Stovall family's cemetery. Like, I figured their plantation was nearby, so they went to the middle of nowhere to put their dead
people.
folks. No, I don't know these people are. I've Googled. Stacy has Googled. I've asked a couple of Clarksdale folks. They have no idea. It's a bunch of people. They have wonderful tombstones. Most of them are from obviously the 1800s. I think the newest burial I saw was 1950, and that's by like 50 years. Most of them were buried by the early 1900s. And it's several different families. Stacy thinks it's people who worked for the Stovall family, maybe,
Yeah.
which makes sense. But what I love is, I mean, it is all overgrown. Like I cannot imagine walking in there in the summertime because it's got to be just, there's vines and plants everywhere. I accidentally messed up some little honey badger's little, burrow. I mean, I don't know if it's a honey badger. I don't know what animal it was, but I messed up its burrow to run to try to read a tombstone. I didn't realize why all those twigs were there. I just thought it was a bunch of twigs in one area.
That
No,
poor
she.
groundhog was like, fuck
I
you.
know. I
This is my
know. So I
house,
stopped as soon
bitch.
as I realized. Like, I started moving a few away, and then I'm like, oh, wait, I think this is like a burrow. And I'm like, bad Sheena, I'm so sorry. So I got enough off to kind of read. But either way, these stones are immaculate. They look so good. I mean, they're dirty, but they're not worn down. There is a
The badger's keeping
beautiful,
them clean.
they are. Like, they're doing such a good job. There's holes all over that place. You got to be careful where you walk because holes everywhere. And I'm like, I'm
Now
going to step in one of these holes
I'm
and I
imagining the
will
groundhog from
break an
Caddyshack
ankle.
now.
Yes, perfect. Perfect casting. So it's so cool because like there was this one, there are several children out there, of course there is, unfortunately. And
Yeah.
there's an angel on top of the monument. That angel is perfect. You can see her little smile on her lips and her little toenails. It's so perfectly preserved. There's one where it has the hand pointing up symbol, like, meaning
Yeah.
heaven. You can see the fingernails. You don't
Damn.
see that anymore because they're so worn. Everywhere I've been in these old Victorian era cemeteries, the stones are so worn. These you could perfectly read all of them. The perfect, perfect stone carving. It was just beautiful, and I absolutely loved it. So I'm so thankful that I got to go out there and visit those folks. I wish I could learn their stories, but I basically have names and dates, and I've Googled, I've searched newspapers.com. I can't find anything much on any of these people. But maybe I'll find something out soon. But either way, it was very cool. So if you are ever down in Clarksdale, I don't know that you should just go traipsing out on this field.
Yeah, maybe
We
not.
probably were trespassing, but it was also like, 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and I don't know that anybody cared. And it's not like that many cars go down that road. Please don't dump your bodies out there, too. I
Yeah,
know I said
no.
that earlier. I know I said that earlier. It's a great place to dump a body, but I don't recommend it. Just out of, just saying that. I'm
Yeah.
not saying,
Oh, and before Lori starts too, I need to talk. We need to give another shout out to unofficial friend of the pod, Ken.
Ken?
Remember, I got my cards done.
Oh, Ian. I love
Yes.
him.
Yes. Were you done? I mean, I didn't want to like cut you off.
No, I'm 100% done. I just
Okay.
was like,
The blank
I well,
stare we just
Stacy's husband is named Ken, and I'm like, Ken
Oh.
for us.
How would I know Stacy's husband? Well,
I
I was.
was like, I haven't seen Ken in a few weeks. Like, what did he do for us?
You should
But
have
no,
said
our
last
friend Ken
name.
Boggle,
I know. I'm
Ken Boggle
sorry.
of
I'm
Living for the
sorry.
Dead, the TV show.
Yes.
Again, it is on the Hulu. I highly recommend you watch it. It's a
It
great
absolutely
show.
is.
And Ken did a good reading for you, didn't he?
He did. He did. I like heard stuff I did not like. I joked that my taste in men is a form of self-harm, and he's like, yeah, no, it's a form of self-harm. I was like, my dude, I
He'll
know
call you out.
that.
Yeah.
And my brother is with my grandmother, which made me extremely, extremely happy. And my gran
Yep.
is protective even in the afterlife because she's kind of like, who are you? No, you
My
cannot talk
grandmother
to
was the
him.
same way. Yeah.
Like he's, and it like settled some things. It gave me like one of the things he said that I like am trying remembering because it was like asking about like career wise, and he's like, you need to stop being afraid of how strong you are. And I was like, oh, Okay. I wish I was wearing a wig. That way you could have snatched it. But it was good. Highly recommend. He's very reasonably priced and
He
he is
is.
just adorbs. And speaking of K-Stew related things, I watched a movie that I think is from like 2017 or 2018 called Personal Shopper. It's
It's a
so
good one.
good. It's on
It's a good one.
Hulu. I highly recommend it. She's topless in a couple scenes, which neither here nor there, but I definitely took notice. But it's really, really good, and I highly recommend. Even titties notwithstanding, it's a very good movie.
It was,
So, okay.
I watched it years ago and I enjoyed it. I don't
Well,
know that I remember a
mom
lot about
watched
it, but
it. Mom watched it, and then she was like, "This has everything. It reminds me of you because the brother thing." And she said, "Also, I know you have a weird thing with Kristen Stewart." I was like, "Shut up, mom."
A crush? What
Look.
weird thing are we talking about here? I think it's
All
just a
right.
crush.
I'm like, "Look, did you see those pictures of her in the jock strap? Leave me alone."
I
Fuck
know
all
the pictures
y'all.
that supposedly set off the world, and they were very upset by them. And I'm like, why? I whatever.
There's so many things to be upset by.
And God bless my mama. Mom's like, "I can't decide if she's a lesbian or not." I'm like, "No, mama, she's a
Oh,
lesbian.
she is.
She's a
Yes.
whole ass lesbian, has a partner and everything."
Good for her. But yeah, Luhu is going to kick us off today. We're just doing a grab bag this week of just whatever we feel like covering. And Luhu is being our most timely, our most news-based. You've got
I'm
some
on the
interesting stuff to share.
ripped
I
from the
do.
headlines. And
Yep.
honestly, it is thanks to Sheena because she is the one who brought this to my attention. So, y'all, back in episode 18, I shared about the case that kind of really got me into true crime, the unsolved murder of the Olive Branch Jane Doe, whose body was discovered in the early morning hours of January 24th, 1985, near the Coldwater River in DeSoto County, Mississippi. I drive past that spot every single day, practically. She had been strangled with a narrow ligature, may have been sexually assaulted, and just very, very sad. She was discovered by a truck driver. So I, of course, almost peed my pants when Sheena dropped a link to the news article sharing that finally, after nearly
Finally.
40 years, the
Oh.
Olive Branch Jane Doe was identified as Lori Ann Mueller Pinnell.
Are you going to
Which
tell
is
them why we all
awfully
flipped out?
similar to.
My first and middle name is Lori Ann. So
And
that
it's
was
spelled the
wild.
same way.
Well, I've seen some news articles put an E at the end of her name. So some call her Lorie, which is really funny because when I was in high school, I spelled my name like that because I wanted to be different.
I love it.
But then there's others that just do the Lori. So that was just like crazy in itself. But yeah, she was identified. She had last been seen at a West Memphis, Arkansas truck stop in 1982.
Oof.
So, she
That's the last
obviously.
place you want to last be seen.
Well, and it's
I
funny because,
know.
in that episode I talk about, because she was initially, they tried to tie her to this redheaded killer theory. And one of the Jane Does that I covered in that episode was last seen in West Memphis, Arkansas at a truck stop, like
Oof.
getting into a truck. So that was kind of creepy. So there's not a lot known about her story yet. Her family did file a missing persons report. No movement was ever made in her case. She was born in Missouri on September 6th, 1962, which would have made her 22 at the time of her death. In
She's
2022,
only a year younger than my mom.
well, what's so
Ooh.
crazy is the artist rendering, and I get into that because, spoiler alert, I talk about Jane Doe's in celebration of this today. Her artist rendering looks nothing like her.
Yeah, I didn't think
She's
so.
aged, but there was a picture on her name miss and all of her different profiles of her, a picture of her face during the autopsy, and she does look, I mean, You're not going to look like yourself after you die. I'm sorry. It just does not
No,
happen.
not really.
She looks older. And
Yeah.
it could very well
Well,
be that those 3 years that she, no one saw her, you
it
know,
could have been
officially
rough.
could have been
Yeah.
rough.
I
Because
was
I
going to
rem
say, oh, yeah, I was going to, I'm probably about to say the same thing you are, Lori. I think I remember from your story that, like, she had, like, didn't have great dental care and just things like that. It, stuff that you'd said, because I went back and listened to your segment from that episode, made me think she had had a pretty rough life, that maybe she didn't grow up with a lot of resources. And I had a feeling she might have been younger, but might have looked quite older, because when you live a rough lifestyle, unfortunately, it
Well,
shows up.
it's like Eileen Wuornos wasn't really that old, but
No.
by the time she got
No.
arrested,
She
she had
looked
just been living
rough.
rough.
Well, like her she was a heavy smoker. Her
Yeah.
nails had been bitten down to chewed down to the nubs. And she had tattoos, but looking like I can't remember, like I didn't write down what the letters were, but they don't correlate to like her name or anything like that. So,
Right. Yeah, they were kind of random.
right.
It sounded like.
Yeah.
I'm
So
sure that
this
meant
was,
something to her.
yeah, this was back in 2021, and I called the Mississippi State Cold Case Unit and I emailed the DeSoto County Sheriff's Department. And then in 2022, the DeSoto County Sheriff's Department submitted her DNA profile to Othram. And it's really cool because one of the big genetic genealogists with Othram lives in Mississippi, is from Mississippi. And so they're like, hey, can you create a genetic genealogy profile? We haven't been able to accomplish it any other time. And so they were able to do that using forensic grade genome sequencing, which led them to Pinnell's brother in California. So details are still pending, but she has her name, and I hope that her headstone will be updated, and that detectives will continue to move forward to solve the next mystery, who was
Does she
responsible for
have
her death.
living family?
She has a brother in California.
Okay.
But, you know, she has that beautiful, nice headstone in Blocker Cemetery. So I'm hoping they update it. And the officer with the DeSoto County Sheriff's Department, who has really been her champion, I feel like she is going to continue to push this and try to see if we can't get any more. Maybe there was DNA that they can submit and try to
Yeah.
find her killer or killers. Because I think it may have been the cold case detective I spoke to said something about there had been two men seen in a truck that were suspected to have been involved, but I can't, again, this was back in 2021 when I talked to that guy. So yeah, in celebration of this amazing news, I'm going to share two stories of Jane Doe's who, thanks to the amazing science of genetic genealogy, have been given their names back and returned to their families.
Heck
Yay!
yeah.
So I'm going to start with the woman known as the Wayne County Jane Doe, 1982. Her identity was a mystery for more than 40 years. Her skeletal remains were discovered in the fork of a tree by hunters on December 26, 1982, near Jacksonburg, Indiana. Clothing found with the body seemed to indicate she had not gone out in the woods for a hike. She was wearing high-heeled clog shoes.
Oh no.
She was wearing a long sleeve blue button up blouse, white bra, gray dress pants, long blue or gray socks, a blue nylon jacket, and a gold ring with an opal and two small diamonds. So obviously, robbery was not the
Yeah,
reason.
right.
Somebody
And
took her out
yeah,
there.
you don't wear all that to go hiking, that's for sure.
No, absolutely not.
Officials were able to identify her as a Caucasian with brown hair between maybe 18 and 22 years old. And maybe I may have mistyped that. That doesn't seem right. I feel like her age was, it had to be wider than that, especially when you see the reconstruction. But that's what I got in my notes. She had been discovered in the wood. She had been in the woods for about 8 months before they discovered her. Her height was estimated between 5'3" and 5'7". And at the time of her discovery, it was reported that they couldn't determine her cause of death, but they did suspect foul play. And once they identified her, they did announce her cause of death. a forensic sketch of what she might have looked like was released, and then there was a sculpture done of her face, and y'all, it's bad.
No, no.
Oh.
And this is why, you know, you can't always depend on that, because
Right.
the
The
way they did,
technology is,
well,
yeah.
the way they did the reconstruction, she's aged, like wrinkles, and the hairstyle is very frumpy. And when you compare pictures of her, and there's no resemblance at all. Like, you would never connect the two.
Yeah.
So I hate that. Years after her case went cold, the Wayne County Coroner's Office, who really championed this case, reached out to the DNA Doe Project for assistance. They uploaded her DNA to GEDmatch and were able to locate two relatives who had submitted their DNA to that database. So that is why it is so important to do that. Submit your DNA. I don't give a
Yeah.
fuck if I have a if it winds up telling me that I have a great uncle who was a serial killer. Good.
I know.
But if there's somebody in your family that's gone missing, or it can give somebody their identity back, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, me neither.
My DNA is not gonna link me to any murders, so
Right. Yeah.
I didn't do nothing.
don't fuck around and find out, y'all. Okay, so the familial connection led to the DNA Doe Project announcing in November of 2023 that the Wayne County Jane Doe 1982 was in fact Connie Lorraine Christensen of Oregon, Wisconsin, which is a small suburb of Madison. She was just 20 years old at the time of her death.
Oh.
Her official cause of death was also released, a gunshot wound.
Oh.
Connie was the mother, so she had been married. I couldn't find any details about her husband, so since she was so young, I don't know if, you know, what's going on there. But she was the mother to a one-year-old daughter named Misty. She had
Oh.
left Misty with family while she went to Nashville, Tennessee, sometime in 1982. So I don't really know what was going on, if she was like trying to get work or if she was traveling to visit a friend, because she was last seen in Nashville in April of that year. And it was believed she may have been 3 to 4 months pregnant when she disappeared.
Oh,
Oh.
wow.
When she didn't return to Wisconsin, her family did file a missing persons report, but a lot of people in the family felt like she left by choice. So her disappearance wasn't something they talked about often. And so Misty went her whole life thinking her mom left her.
That's
Poor
awful,
thing.
baby.
And she was contacted by the Wayne County's coroner's office in 2022. And she said, quote, "I immediately started crying, and one of my coworkers was like, 'It might not be her.' And I'm like, 'You don't understand, like, it's her. I know it is.'" And she told that to a TV station that interviewed her.
Oh.
So again, they never spoke much about Connie, but after the announcement, she was given the opal ring, which she wears on a necklace around her neck, and she has a pendant that are ma that that is includes some of her mother's ashes.
Oh. That's sweet.
Yeah,
That
very
is
sweet.
sweet. The kids
So,
have those of their dad's ashes, and
yeah.
it's
Yeah.
helpful.
No, I told my dad, I said, "I hope you don't think this is weird, but when you die, you know, I'll bury your ashes like you want me to, but I hope you don't mind if I keep like a little teaspoonful to make like a ring sticking out of
Yeah,
it."
I have
He's
a
like,
lock on my brother's hair that I haven't decided what I'm going to do with yet, but I'm going to do something with.
So Connie's remains were returned to the family and her ashes buried next to her parents, Neil and Winnie, and her brother, Jeff, in the Bee Town Cemetery in Bee Town, Wisconsin. I just love that name, Bee Town.
B-E-E, like the bug.
Yes, like
Ah,
the bug.
how
Cute.
cute.
Yes. Her headstone reads, "Connie L. Christensen, April 16th, 1962 to December 26th, 1982, forever in our hearts." The headstone also has a little etching of a cat, which was her favorite animal, as well as an oak tree and an apple. And I'm not really sure what the significance of that might be, but I'm sure there's a
I
story
know
there.
oak tree has some significance, like in death stuff.
Yeah. But so her murder case is still open. And it seems like because it's so old, the local police department doesn't have the records anymore. And the state
Right.
police have just said, "You know what, coroner's office, go for it." So
Right.
they are really engaged in trying to find out who killed Connie, as is her daughter, because
Yeah,
her daughter
absolutely.
wants to know. And so the next one I will talk about today is Jane Annie Doe, a woman who was found in the woods near Grants Pass, Oregon, in August of 1971. And for years, she was the oldest case worked on by the Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Oh,
But
wow.
again, thanks to genetic genealogy, her identity was finally discovered in 2019. The skeletal remains of Jane Annie Doe were discovered by a father and son who had stopped along the Redwood Highway in Josephine County, Oregon, which is near the Oregon-California border, on the morning of August 19th, 1971. While a cause of death could not be determined, again, authorities are like, this girl didn't just die in the woods. Something's up here.
Right.
They estimated her age to be between 14 and 25, her height to be 5'4", and her weight 125 pounds. So petite little girl. Her hair was auburn with blonde streaks. Her remains were found with a pink and beige checkered coat, tan and beige long sleeve turtleneck sweater, jeans, and size 8.5 chunky brown leather shoes with gold buckles. So very
Oh,
much a
that's
70s
fashion.
girl.
I
Yeah.
know, yeah.
She also had pretty unique jewelry. She had a sterling brand silver friendship band with the letters MH stamped in on the inside. And additionally, she wore a mother of pearl ring, and the letters A and L were like scratched into the stone. It wasn't like a professional etching. It was like somebody
Right.
scratched it like with a almost with like a little knife.
Okay.
And I think I have a picture of that that Sheena will post. She had 38 cents and a map of recreational sites in Northern California in her pockets. And after months of no movement on the case, she was moved to storage and her case made inactive. And she was listed as Jane Doe, Josephine County, 71940. In August of 2004, cold case detectives took a look at her case, and forensic artist Joyce Nagy completed a clay facial reconstruction and nicknamed the girl Jane Annie Doe because she felt like her name, her face, just was an Annie. The image of the reconstruction was distributed across the United States and received several leads, but none led to the discovery of Annie's true identity. In 2016, a forensic isotope analysis found that she most likely resided in the Pacific Northwest. That's where she was found. A new forensic drawing was also released with the new information, but again, no real fruitful leads came from it. In early 2017, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children partnered with the DNA Doe Project in hopes of learning Annie's identity. The Oregon State Medical Examiner's Office, which had possession of her remains since 2013, submitted her DNA to the DNA Doe Project, and eventually they were able to match her DNA to a sister who resided in Washington State. In March of 2019, investigators announced that Jane Annie Doe was, y'all, this is going to be Anne Marie Lehman, a 16-year-old from
Oh,
Aberdeen, Washington, who was
wow.
called Annie by her friends and family.
Oh my God, that's
This is
insane.
like
us finding out that our Jane Doe is Lori Ann, and we have a
I
Lori
know,
Ann.
that's
That's so wild.
crazy.
That investigator must have been a little psychic.
Must have.
Seriously.
Must have. She had gone missing under suspicious circumstances in either the fall of 1970 or spring of 1971. And sadly, there's not a lot to go on because her sister was 6 years older than her. And so at the time Annie was identified, she would have been 65. So her sister was
Oh.
in her 70s when this happened. So,
Oh, bless.
according to Detective Ken Salig of the Josephine County Sheriff's Office, her sister Virginia recalled that she came home one day and found Annie packing her bags to leave. So they didn't have the best household. Their father had a serious
Yeah.
drinking problem. Home life wasn't easy. When Virginia asked where Annie was going, Annie responded with her and pointed to an older woman who was just kind of hanging out. Another family member allegedly was able to track down this woman who told them that Annie had been trafficked and was most likely taken to San Francisco.
Oh, Jesus. Wow. That's terrifying to hear.
So, you know, the two things are she was either sex trafficked, which, oh my God, or right. she was a runaway. But it seems more likely that she was trafficked. So I'm not sure what happened to her remains, but I would assume they were returned to Virginia because I did find information about her parents, Norma and Albert. They did at some point get divorced. Norma remarried a man named Thomas Ostrich. And okay. I'm pretty sure they had a son together because I saw that listed somewhere. Annie also had a brother, Alan, who served in the Army during the Vietnam War and died in 2007. Norma died in 1991. She was cremated and her ashes were scattered in the Pacific Ocean. And then Albert died in 1994 at 82. So I guess long life being a drunkard. And he was also cremated. So I feel like Annie was probably cremated.
Right.
And her ashes spread somewhere.
Yeah.
But part of me, when I think about this, if she was trafficked, I wonder, like, because they weren't able to determine her cause of death. So she was murdered, obviously. I wonder if she knew what was going to happen to her or just had a feeling. Because, again, when you see this ring, you like it. I'm serious. Like, it was something that I would etch with, like, I would open up a safety pin or something.
Right.
Because it is very lightly done.
Well, yeah. I mean, even if she's being trafficked and they're telling her, oh, use a different name, she might have done that to, like, remind herself almost. And, like, you know,
this is the only clue I can leave are my initials.
Bless
her
heart.
And here we go. And she was so adorable, y'all. She had this cute little, her hair wasn't like red, and a lot of the artist renderings of
they
her
heard Annie and made her a redhead.
Well, yeah. I mean, because she did, I guess, have auburn streaks at some point, but her hair was brown. And in the picture you see, of course, it's black and white, so you can't really see anything, but she has like really dark hair. And like I said, she was so cute, and it's so sad that this happened to her. But again, genetic genealogy is just the fucking best, y'all. And it's taken so long, but you know, it's proving.
But it's never
successful.
Too late.
Yeah, no, I mean that's how they're still identifying Gacy victims.
Right.
Know,
that was
genealogy.
That was one of them that was listed on the DNA Doe Project as one of their success cases. Was fifth victim. And so, yeah, I was just going through that website, just looking at all of their success stories and reading about them. And there are so many on there. And again, Annie was the oldest one, you know, practically 50 years. Mm. And so there is hope that we can.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sucks that they're never going to probably find out what happened to her. But
right,
at least they know who she is. And she, you know.
In all likelihood, her killer's probably done.
Oh, yeah.
Probably absolutely. Is. And you just got to hope that karma took care
got
of
him.
That
yeah.
person.
Right.
So.
Absolutely. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Good job, Luhu.
Yeah, I really like
Love
these
it.
Does. We're going to have to do another doe episode.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's like,
we definitely should. Yep. Well,
all right.
Hannah, do you want to go next or do you want me to go next?
I'll go.
Okay.
So this was either going to be the longest or the shortest ever. And I decided just to go with shortest because I'm going to pull from this more because there's a ton of really cool stuff associated with this. So one of the most haunted cemeteries in the U.S. is the Bachelor's Grove Cemetery.
Yes!
Right in my backyard in Bremen Township, right outside of Chicago. It's has a bunch of different spellings, but it is most famous for its ghost lore. So we're going to talk a little bit about its history and a little bit about some other stuff. And then there's going to be a list of like different hauntings, and I'm going to expound on a few of them, but I'm going in deep on some of these hauntings in other episodes because it's super interesting.
Yay.
So the area around Bachelor's Grove Cemetery was originally settled by the English who had relocated from New England, including Stephen Rexford, who was the most well-known of the first wave of the settlers around 1833. According to legal records, Edward M. Everden sold the property to Frederick Schmidt in 1864, reserving and setting aside 1 acre of land for use as a graveyard. Historians are unsure of the origin of the name Bachelor's Grove. A family named Bashelder were known to be living in the area by 1845, so it could be named after them. The other comes from claims by Rexford that he and three other single men settled the area, so Bachelor's Grove. Variations of the name of the grove include Bachelor, Bashelder, Bashelder, Burzel, Petzel, Backler, Bachelor, and Batchel.
I kept
So
waiting for pretzel.
I know I saw Petzl and got very, very excited. However, it is suspected that it is a deviation from Bashelder, so that makes sense to me. The first post office in the area was in 1843, and that was named Bachelor's Grove. So we're in that general area. According to a 1917 manuscript, the first burial was that of Eliza Scott in November of 1844. Accounts published in the local newspaper, the Blue Island Sun Standard, lists William B. Noble as being buried in Bachelor's Grove in 1838. The last burial there was Robert Shields, who was buried in a family plot in 1989. So it's had a long run. Some families have had bodies moved to other cemeteries with relocations dating to the late 1880s. And it is supervised by the cemetery trustees of the Cook County Board. So I do like that the Cook County has cemetery trustees. Unfortunately, because youth's gonna youth, there's been some vandalism.
Boo.
Boo! We don't like cemetery vandalism.
Nope.
During the 1970s, the cemetery gained fame among ghost hunters and other sorts of folk that it was haunted due to its secluded location. The youths would often go out there to drink, drug, fuck, and vandalize grave sites. There's like a whole genre of horror movies as to why you should not do that. But,
Yep.
you know, kid's gonna kid.
Yep.
Consequently, few original markers remain from the more than 200 burials dating from the 1840 to the early 1960s. I wonder if it's haunted because all these fucking horny ass kids went and fucked with their final resting place.
Probably, you would think.
Or on the final resting place.
Exactly.
Oh.
Ugh.
Please don't
Look.
do that unless you just want to be haunted. Or unless you're, was it Mary Shelley who did that? It was
Yes.
some
With her, she lost her
writer.
virginity on her mama's grave. But
Yeah.
you have to
Do
be
you
Mary fucking
know?
Shelley to get, and Mary Wollstonecraft would have been fine with that.
Like, I cannot imagine the haunting I would get from my mother if I'd done that. Like, my
Like, if
mother,
it's
God bless her, bit of
Gigi.
a prude, she would have murdered. She would have clawed her way out of the grave and murdered me right there.
Like, if it's Gigi Allen, okay,
Oh,
fine.
that's
Do
what I'm saying.
it.
He would love
That,
it. He'd
he
be
would
like, front
absolutely
row
love it.
show. I love it.
And, like, I don't
But your
plan on
mother?
being. No, like I don't plan on being buried, but my mom is intent that I have my name on a marker somewhere. And I'm like,
Yes.
come visit. You can drink there, but don't fuck on my grave. That's
Dang
rude.
it, Hannah. You're
I
taking
know.
away all my fun.
I know. I
I'm
know.
kidding. I'm
If
kidding.
you
I
want
would
to fuck
never.
with my ashes, you are more than welcome to. Just cover my
Like
eyes.
fornication is just, you know,
Yeah,
right. I never
not my
understood
jam.
parties where teenagers were having sex with each other because I'm like, are you fucking in front of other people?
I
Like, this
know.
seems that's like dudes
Ew.
that watch porn together. Are you like sitting there next to another dude getting hard? That's weird.
I bet your
Anyway,
daddy loves this episode.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Dad. I'll see you in a few days. You can yell at me then.
That's right.
So Brad Bettenhausen, who is the president emeritus of the Tinley Park Historical Society, says kids start going there to drink and to party. They leave their trash behind, and you get scary stories told around a little campfire, what have you. This is where the legends start. He's not wrong. This is how it starts. He also wrote that claims of floating lights, phantom cars, ghostly apparitions, and other stories have been told and retold. However, few of these tales have any apparent basis in fact. Bettenhouse, he's a bit of a killjoy. Because
Oh.
we are going to talk about some of these hauntings.
Yes.
So, like I said, I'm not going to go into super detail because I'm going to go into super detail later. But there is a website called bachelorsgrove.com, and they have a paranormal Google map.
Ooh.
So you can load this map and have it, and you can go to all the different paranormal sites that are alleged around Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. So one weekend, you
I
guys
have
are
a
coming up and
question.
we're doing this. Yes.
I thought I've heard Bachelor's Grove is closed to the public. Is that true?
Technically, because it is
Okay.
on private property.
Okay.
So one does what one does. If you
Yeah.
get arrested for trespassing, it's not my fault.
This whole episode has a theme of trespassing because that's what I
Yes.
did last weekend in a cemetery.
Exactly. Look,
Probably.
we do what we do. Okay,
Yeah.
So among some of the hauntings or phenomenon is a blue light. There is the apparition of the caretaker. There is a disappearing house. There is a farmer and a horse. I love a ghost horse.
Yes,
There
always.
is the Madonna of Bachelor's Grove, who is a woman in white. There is a phantom dog. Again, I love an animal ghost. There's a red light. There is the Hook Man.
Ooh. Yes.
And there is a yellow man.
Okay,
And
so I have to know, do the blue and red lights, like these entities, do they hate each other? Are they kind of like, I'm
they
red,
appear
I'm blue, I hate you?
together.
Well, that
They
was my next question. Or do they combine to become purple?
don't combine, but if you see
Darn.
one, the other one is typically not far.
So they work together.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you're going to be a black light in death. Lori will be a purple light. I will be an orange light. And we have to be together and we have to work together.
Oh, I
Okay?
would absolutely be a UV light. Are you kidding me?
Yes. Okay, anyway.
So that is just some of the little hauntings, like I said, that are going with Bachelor's Grove. I'm going to go into like way more detail on this with like each individual haunting on like other episodes. So I told you this is either going to be the shortest or the longest. I do
Here
what I
for it.
can.
Here for
Right.
it. Yes.
So if you've been to Bachelor's Grove, please let me know.
Yes, we want to hear stories.
If you currently own it and you don't mind us trip-tropping through there, also let me know because I am dying to make a trip,
Me
but I
too.
don't
I've
want to
always
get
wanted to go.
and I'm not trying to get shot.
Yeah,
So
nope.
Definitely
Not at
let us
all.
know. So yeah,
We will be
that's Bachelor's Grove.
respectful. We will be
Absolutely.
respectful.
I respect property rights.
I know. I mean, unless it's in a field and I think I can get away with it,
You know
then
what? It's a
I
former
take off.
plantation. Fuck them. They get what they deserve.
It's kind of what I was thinking in a way, but it was fun because for the longest, the only thing we heard out there was like a moo cow out somewhere, like rare. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then I heard like men talking, and I'm like, okay, I don't like hearing men talking. Like that's a little terrifying. So,
Right.
but
I don't like hearing men talking, even when I'm not expecting it.
I know. But yeah, I think we're gonna do hauntings next week.
Absolutely.
Because Spider Monkey's birthday is this month. And
Yes.
so we are going to do some hauntings. So maybe you can cover some of those next week. Just a few, maybe.
Absolutely.
Or whatever you want to
Absolutely.
do. I'm not here
I'm turning
to release
40
your
and
story.
fabulous, so
Yeah, you are.
yes.
Welcome to the club.
Hell yeah.
Okay. Well, to wrap things up, I have a fun stuff. Maybe it's fun. I think it's funny. I'm going to say a bunch of cute phrases here. You might have heard some of them. Maybe you haven't. I don't know. But these are funny little phrases that I enjoy. You can lead a horticulture, but you can't make her think. How
Dare
dare
you?
men seldom make passes at girls who wear glasses. I heard
Oh,
that
I
my
know
whole
that one.
life.
Yes.
Beauty is only skin deep, but ugly goes clean to the bone.
Okay, yes.
I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy.
That too.
I don't know much about being a millionaire, but I bet I'd be darling at it. And you can't take it with you, and even if you did, it would probably melt. So it is Women's History Month, and in honor of the very witty, funny lady who said these things, I'm going to cover poet, critic, satirist, and writer Dorothy Parker, because she's got just a great little personality on her. She's a great writer. I love writers, so here we go. So picture it. Dorothy Rothschild was born August 22nd, 1893, in Long Beach, New Jersey. Yes, that makes her a Leo, and yes, she is one of the Rothschilds. I don't know that she's one of like the big mama jamas, or if she's just sort of an offshoot over here. They were kind of well off, but they weren't like
Ruling the world
Rothschild.
well off.
Yeah, there's a difference. But her uncle was on the Titanic and died on it.
Oh
So
wow. I mean,
there's that.
there's like rich and then there's like ancestral wealth. Yes.
Her aunt and her puppy dog survived this
Oh,
Titanic.
that's
But
good.
I know I was very happy about the puppy and the aunt, but I was like, oh yay, the puppy did die. Yay.
Right, exactly.
But there was a lot of death in Dorothy's childhood. Her mother died just before she turned 5.
Oh.
Her father remarried 2 years later. And then here's the thing about Dorothy. She never really let the truth get in the way of a good story. So
I love
sometimes she would,
it.
I know, me too. Sometimes she would say something and then they would ask her about it later. She'd be like, I never said that. Or, oh my God, shut up. It wasn't said seriously. So, at some point she said her dad was abusive, but we don't know how true that is. Her biographer said it was not true. And then I read that she hated her stepmother to the point that she never called her mother, stepmother, or even Eleanor, which was her first name. She just called her the housekeeper. Oh,
Ah,
I
petty
love that.
queen.
I love that.
Damn.
But I've also heard that wasn't true either. But if it is, I love it. Anyway, it makes out for a dramatic beginning of her life. But her stepmother died when she was 9. And then
Damn.
her, I know, and then her dad died when she was 20. So she started playing piano at a dance school to earn a living, and she started writing poetry too. And she sold her first poem to Vanity Fair in 1914. She was then hired as an editorial assistant at Vogue and then was hired as a staff writer at Vanity Fair. In 1917, when she was 24, she married Edwin Parker, a Wall Street stockbroker, just as he was about to leave for World War I. So that's very dramatic. But then her career took off in 1918. She began writing theater criticism for Vanity Fair. And she, as you can imagine, was very witty. She could be very cutting with her criticisms. But if she liked you, she was just as funny. It would be praise instead of vicious criticism.
I love it.
And because she was so funny and witty, people were scrambling to read what she thought about these plays, good or bad. Around this time, she started having lunch almost daily at the Algonquin Hotel in New York with some writers like Robert Benchley and playwright Robert Sherwood. And this became the basis of the Algonquin Roundtable. And other writers would join them. They would all just get together and have lunch like almost every day. It became known as like the Vicious Circle because they were sitting around being catty and witty and all
I want
this.
to go there.
Same,
I
same,
want to
same,
be a
same.
part of it.
I know. There were a lot of people like newspaper columnists, editors, novelists, people who were very rad in their day. And when, quite frankly, they would have their own little Wikipedia page. But I was like, I don't know these names. So I'm not going to bother our listeners. Just know that they were big deals at the time. The only one I knew for sure was comedian Harpo Marx.
Oh.
So there
Oh,
you
that
go.
was a funny ass lunch then.
Yes, it was. Between Dorothy, Harpo Marx, and then just other writers who think they're funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the columnists regularly wrote about their lunches and the things that they all said, especially Dorothy. So this plus her writing just led her to being known as a wit. People just thought she was this funny person who could just turn a cute phrase on a dime.
That's like whenever we went on vacation, we used to have like the whole thing of notes of like the dumb shit we would
Our quote
say.
wall. Yes. Every time I'm out with my friends, we always have to start a quote wall and we have to write down everything. And it's so funny because, like, especially sometimes with Spencer, I'll go back and read some of his to him and he's like, I don't remember that at all. And I'm like, well, you were high and or drunk, so you know it happens.
Right.
Sorry, the flu.
It's okay.
She was super popular at this, at her theater criticism and all, until she offended actress Billie Burke. She wrote something not so nice about
Oh.
her. She was Glinda the Good Witch. Don't
Yes.
take off
Yeah.
Glinda the Good Witch.
No.
She and her husband, Florin Ziegfeld, of, you know,
Oh,
Ziegfeld
Ziegfeld
Follies.
Follies.
So these two basically were like, hey, you were mean to us. And so they got her fired. And supposedly
Oh.
some other writers quit in protest and solidarity, but that didn't do anything to like get the magazine's publishers to hire her back. So she just started writing for other magazines. She was on the founding board of editors for The New Yorker.
Oh.
And she became known for her short, funny poems. They were very caustic, very witty. She wrote about love or the lack thereof. She wrote about death. Just a little bit of everything. Her poems are just fabulous. So she published 300 poems between night during the 1920s in Vanity Fair, Vogue, McCall's Life, lots of other magazines. She published her first volume of poetry called Enough Rope in
Oh,
1926.
I love it.
Oh yeah. It was a critical and commercial success. And this is what I love about her. This is from a critic who wrote about her poems. And I'm like, this is exactly who she is. It was from The Nation. The Nation said her poems were caked with salty humor, rough with splinters of disillusion, and tarred with a bright black authenticity. Like, that is Dorothy Parker.
I like it.
Salty humor, splinters of disillusion, and a bright black authenticity. I hope someone
I feel like
describes me
this
that
is
way.
my soulmate.
I know. That's why I wanted to cover her. Like, she reminds me of practically every woman I know because every woman I know is this salty. Thank God.
Right.
In the late 20s and early 30s, she wrote more poetry collections and she also published some short story collections. Her most famous short story is called Big Blonde, and it won the O. Henry Award as the best short story of 1929. Now, don't go into Bl Big Blonde thinking, oh, this is going to be some hilarious story. It's pretty dark. It deals with alcoholism and a suicide attempt. There, I should have said this from the beginning. We do get to some suicide attempts and suicide ideology throughout this, so I should have said that from the beginning. I'm sorry I didn't. But we're not going to dwell on it. But it, you know, I mean, but the story's great. This I read it. It was wonderful, but it has a few moments of things being pretty dark. But I think it's something a lot of women went through during the 20s and 30s, dealing with an alcoholic husband who then you become alcoholic too, and sort of just and dealing with depression. It's a really frank look at depression, I think.
Well, and you know, a lot of the World War I vets were just so fucked up by that experience.
Well, speaking of, perfect
Oh
timing, Hannah.
dear. Hell yeah.
She filed for divorce from Edwin Parker in 1928. I could have swore I read somewhere he had come home with some pretty bad PTSD and that he
Yeah.
was an alcoholic, but I couldn't find that after I swore I read it somewhere. So I'm like,
Right.
I don't want to say that was 100% what it was, but I think that's what I read it's in one of my sources. Anyway.
It wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't imagine coming home from that war and not having PTSD or any war. But two, Dorothy had not been faithful. I'm sure he probably wasn't either. But this is the funniest, saddest thing I've ever read in my life. At one point, she did become pregnant by a reporter and playwright, Charles MacArthur. And what she said about that was, how like me to put all my eggs in one bastard.
Oh,
I'm sorry, but that's the best line I've ever heard. But she did have a,
Jesus.
I know, but she did have an abortion and she became very depressed after that, which
Lois.
I can
Yeah.
imagine. That's such a
That's
gut-wrenching
a
decision to
lot.
have to
Yeah.
make. It's a huge decision. And I read that this was her first suicide attempt, and I didn't read any more about any other ones, but it made it sound like this was her first of several, but I didn't read anything else about them. I don't know. I know she struggled with her mental health, but anyway,
She's
which I
been
would
through a
think,
lot.
She's been through a lot, and having, getting pregnant by your boyfriend and having to make that choice to have an abortion, that's never easy. So
And in that period, I mean, it's not like
in
you
that
went to
time
a
period,
medical clinic. That was a
nope,
back alley.
it was. So it's I mean, it's amazing she survived it, because that's what happens when you take away access to
Right.
safe abortions, is you make every abortion unsafe and you are hurting women anyway. So in 1932, Dorothy met Alan Campbell, an actor who wanted to be a screenwriter. They married in 1934 and they moved to Hollywood. And it's not as simple as I'm making it sound, but they basically went and got jobs at Paramount working as
No.
screenwriters. I
Back
have a
when you could
feeling it
do
was,
that.
yeah, I mean, I think there was a, it wasn't quite that easy, but at the same time, she was known. They received writing credits for more than 15 films between 34 and 41. Dorothy Allen and a guy named Robert Carson wrote the script for the 1937 version of A Star Is Born. This is the first version of A Star Is Born. There are other versions that's been remade three
So
times.
many.
Three more times. So there are four A Star Is Born movies, if you didn't know that. The one that Dorothy wrote for starred Janet Gaynor and Friedrich March. But the other three versions have Judy Garland, Barbra Streisand, and Gaga, of course, we know. Anyway,
The
they were
Barbra
nominated.
Streisand one's my favorite.
I've never seen that one. I'm not a big
I've
Barbra
seen so
Streisand fan.
good. Yeah, I
I'm
don't like
not a big
babs.
Barbra.
Chris
No.
Christopherson's pretty hot in it.
I'm a huge Gaga fan, so I love the Gaga one. And I've been meaning to watch the Judy Garland one. I've started it, but it's like long. It's like 2 or 3 hours
Yeah.
long. And I'm like, y'all, we got ADHD these days. Anyway,
Right. Wrap it up.
I know. I'm like, we know what happens. She becomes a star. Let's tell the story. Anyway, they were nominated for an Academy Award for Best Writing and Screenplay for this. And then what I
Awesome.
also love was Dorothy wrote additional dialogue for The Little Foxes, which stars Bette Davis. That's one of my favorite Bette Davis roles, because she is cruel in that movie. She is cold-hearted. Like in one scene, I'm not spoiling much for you, just to show how cruel and cold-hearted she is. She wants her husband's money. He has heart issues. She knows this. He starts having a heart attack in front of her, and she sits there and watches him. He is begging her to go get his medicine, and she just sits there.
I love it.
And once he's dead, then she's like, oh my God, my husband. It is such a good classic scene. Like, it is so cold. Oh, she's so mean in that movie. It's so good. Anyway, so I love that Dorothy Parker wrote for Bette Davis. Like, I think they should have written everything together and have Bette deliver it. Like, anyway, she also received an Oscar nomination for writing Smash Up, The Story of a Woman, in
Oh.
1947 with Frank Cabot. That starred Susan Hayward, which I now want to look that up, because I would like to be known as Smash Up, The Story of a Woman. Why not?
Yeah.
Anyway, during the 30s and 40s, she became more involved in politics and activism. She helped found the Hollywood Anti-Nazi League. Heck
Hell
yes.
yeah.
Which the FBI suspected was a Communist Party
Of
front.
course they did. Of course they
Imagine
did.
that. She chaired the Joint Anti-Fascist Refugee Committee's fundraising department, the Spanish
Fuck
Refugee
yeah.
Appeal. She was listed as a communist in the Red Channels publication in 1950. I don't know that she was an out-and-out communist. Like, she was like,
She
yes,
just didn't
Communist
like
Party. She
fascists.
didn't like fascists. She didn't like Nazis. She was just incredibly leftist. And I'm like, yes, thank you, ma'am. Thank you for standing up for what's right. Because here on this podcast, we don't believe in Nazis and we don't like
Nope.
fascism.
We
So
punch them.
I would love to. So this, of course, led her to being blacklisted in Hollywood,
Of
because of
course.
course it did. Meanwhile, her marriage to Alan Campbell was messy.
Imagine that.
I read somewhere he was a bisexual little flower. So
Ooh.
good for him,
Yeah, good
but
for
I
you,
don't
Alan.
know. But she was drinking more, and he was having affairs. You know how it is. There's affairs,
That'll
there's
happen.
alcohol. That it's never good. They have a messy couple of years together. So they divorced in 47. They reconciled and remarried in 1950, and then they separated again in 52 when she moved to New York.
Oh, boy.
And then in several for several years, she wrote book reviews for Esquire, but because her drinking was getting worse, it made her work suffer. And then she went back to Hollywood in 61 and reconciled with Alan, but then he died of a drug overdose in 63. And I've read in some sources that that was a suicide. I don't know how true that is, but he did die fairly young. So Dorothy went back to New York after Alan died. She worked on a few more projects, but nothing major. She passed away on June 7th, 1967, of a heart attack at the age of 73. And because she is a beautiful leftist lady, she left her entire estate to Martin Luther King Jr.
I love it.
This was June of 67, so he did not live much longer. So after he was murdered in April of 68, her estate then went to the NAACP.
Good for her.
Now, I know. I will say this, where she ended up is very fascinating. So we're going to go on a bit of a ride here. And I hate that someone's final resting place is a ride, but it kind of is. So she was cremated, but she didn't have any kids. And I don't think many or any relatives. I know she had some brothers and sisters, but I could find very little on them. So she was cremated and her ashes were unclaimed for years. The crematorium eventually sent her ashes to her lawyer in 1973, where they
Damn.
stayed in a colleague's filing cabinet for 17 years.
Oh my
In a
God.
filing cabinet! Have some respect here, people.
I get left in a
Finally,
filing cabinet. I'm haunting
oh,
some
I'm
of those
haunting
papers.
everybody. I'm haunting everybody. Yeah. Finally, the lawyer and columnist Liz Smith brought this to the public's attention. So the NAACP decided to claim her ashes and they designed a memorial garden for her outside of their Baltimore headquarters.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so they put up a little garden and they put up a sign. It said, "Here lie the ashes of Dorothy Parker, humorist, writer, critic, defender of human and civil rights." For her epitaph, she suggested, "Excuse my dust." This memorial garden is dedicated to her noble spirit, which celebrated the oneness of humankind and to the bonds of everlasting friendship between Black and Jewish people. Dedicated by the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, October 28th, 1988. Well, that's great.
Oh,
But then the
love excuse my
NAACP,
dust.
yes, that was her original epitaph, which I love. But then the NAACP was going to move in 2020.
Oh.
This is very recent. We've got a lot of recent changes here. They were going to move from wherever they were in Baltimore to more downtown Baltimore. And then they said they were going to move to DC. I'm not sure where they are now. I have not looked that up. But the question then was, okay, if y'all are leaving, then are y'all going to leave Dorothy there? Like, you
Right.
know? So they wanted to do right by her. The NAACP was like, no, we're going to do this and do this right. They found some relatives and they said, you know what? Her dad had actually paid for her a plot at the family cemetery lot in Woodlawn Cemetery in the Bronx. So her ashes have now been interred there. She was privately reburied on August 22nd, 2020. That would have been her 127th birthday. So
Oh.
she is beside her parents, and she had now has this huge, nice monument. Her name is in the middle of this wreath that's carved into the monument. And it has her dates and it has a part of her poem. And this is the last of the poem. I want to say it's called A Red Young Rose, but I could be wrong. It's called Leave for Her a Red Young Rose. Go your way and save your pity. She is happy, for she knows that her dust is very pretty. So
Oh,
that's lovely. Now,
I love
Woodlawn
it.
Cemetery, we have discussed many times before because Nellie Bly is buried there. So is Olive Thomas. That you covered, Luhu. And then we've just got a bunch of just amazing people buried there. You've got Cecily Tyson, Madam C.J.
Oh.
Walker, Irving Berlin, Diane Carroll, Celia Cruz, Miles Davis, W.C. Handy from here in Memphis, Herman Melville, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, James Anthony Bailey of Barnum and Bailey Circuses. Like so many cool people. Like we've got to get to the cemetery and just trip over all these
Yeah,
celebrities because there are so many.
absolutely.
I did not name them all. There are so many, so many. Since her passing, Dorothy has been honored several times. The USPS issued a Dorothy Parker commemorative stamp on her 99th birthday in 1992. I wish I had a sheet of those now.
Yeah.
The Algonquin Hotel is still there, and her birthplace as well as a hotel, have been listed as historic landmarks and national literary landmarks. And then in 1994, I meant to look this up or rent it, and I didn't because I decided to cover Dorothy Parker kind of late in the game. And plus, I've been sick and busy doing other things. But in 1994, there was a movie about Dorothy and the Algonquin Round Table called Mrs. Parker and the Vicious Circle, which that's what they kind of also called that circle of people because they were catty, funny people, right?
I love it.
Jennifer Jason Leigh stars as Dorothy Parker. Campbell
Ooh.
Scott is in it, and Matthew Broderick is her husband, is Edwin Parker. So I'd love to see that. Can I just say Jennifer Jason Leigh killed it in the most recent season of Fargo? Oh my God. She was
I
like
need
my
to
favorite
see
person.
it because I love
So
her.
good. So good. There are a few. Oh, also the 2018 film Can You Ever Forgive Me, based on the 2008 memoir of the same name, Melissa McCarthy plays Lee Israel, the author who for a long time forged original letters in Dorothy Parker's name, which that's not cool. But I wanted to
Hollywood Crime
end.
Scene has an episode about her.
Yeah, and there's a one from, oh my God, it's the Hollywood History podcast that I love. You
You
must
must
remember
remember
this.
this.
They have an episode on her about, especially specifically about her being blacklisted. And I meant to listen to that and I did not because I'm a bad person. But I
It's not
wanted
like you've
to,
had the flu or anything. Right,
yeah,
Jesus.
and trying to, move my entire life around and everything else anyway.
Adulthood, man. Adulthood.
Oh, geez. But she did write a lot about life and death, and I wanted to end on a couple of funny poems or funny things she said about death. This one, I forget the name of it. I know I saved it, but this is basically why you shouldn't kill yourself.
Okay.
So, razors pain you, rivers are damp, acids stain you, and drugs cause cramp. Guns aren't lawful, nooses give. Gas smells awful, you might as well live.
Ah, that was a girl interrupted.
Sure was. And then this is a good thing that she had just said at some point that I liked. That would be a good thing for them to cut on my tombstone. Wherever she went, including here, it was against her better judgment.
I
I
love her.
adore the hilarious, very human lady, Dorothy Parker.
We love
Yeah,
it. That's awesome.
yes. And yeah, it is like Women's History Month, so go learn about some awesome ladies from history. And
Absolutely.
her books are online. A lot of them are. I found several of her short story collections on like Audible websites, like on Spotify and stuff like that. And I found a few like ebooks, and I read some of her poems. They're so good. Just funny stuff and a lot of stuff that I'm like, I'm saving this because I want that on my tombstone. I'm saving this because I want that on my tombstone.
Right.
So many good ones. So anyway, that's Dorothy Parker. I love it.
Woohoo!
We would love it. Speaking of loving things, we would love it very much if you would leave us a review, if you
Absolutely.
would tell your friends about us. Seriously, it would make our
Pretty
day. And don't you
please.
love us? Dang it. You better love
You
us.
should. We love
Yes.
you.
If you've made it
Well,
this far, I hope you just don't hate listen.
I know.
Well,
And
even then, the
Luhu.
numbers count, so hate listen all you want.
True. Yeah. Luhu, where can they find us online?
We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Cemetery Row Pod, or you can email us at cemeteryrowpod@gmail.com. Yay!
Yes. So yes, shoot us an email, tell us what's going on in your life and all that good stuff. And we'll see you next time for some hauntings.
Yes!
Love it.
Yay.
Woohoo!
Bye.
Bye.
Bye!